You are listening to CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offutt Kerman, attorneys at law, your perfect legal partner.
Hello, my name is Christopher Schaefer. I am the proprietor of Christopher Schaefer Clothier. I'm also the founder of Sharp Dress Man.
So you want to walk us through the founding of Christopher Schaefer Clothiers?
Sure. So we started in autumn 2010. And at that same time was when you would just focus on Christopher Schaefer, talk about Sharp Dress Man later, because they both happen kind of at the same time. But we'll focus on Christopher Schaefer.
Yeah, and then we'll ask separate.
Fair enough.
That could be a separate video.
Okay, you got it. Go ahead. So have at it. I guess ask the question again. Yeah.
So you want to walk us through the founding of Christopher Schaefer?
Sure. So I started the business in autumn of 2010. And at that point, My music studio where I rehearse was my fitting room as well. So I had one room where we jammed out of, and then the other room where had it as a lounge and where I do fittings. That was at a place called the Hour House, which is up next to where the old Joe Square was on the corner of Howard and North. So that was where. So I've always mixed music and fashion together since the inception of this business because they're two of my passions. So it started in 2010, started out of there, and then was there for about a year before moving down to the place where I'm in Fells Point now, where the next place that I was in, we did it as a collective with, had started another business and had some other friends that were all kind of splitting the rent as the business grew to now at a point where we're coming up on 7 years of being in business.
What were the influences that shaped, you know, you being a musician and then shaped, you know,
sure,
the same stuff into clothes and fashion?
Well, you know, I think that music and fashion really, they go together very well, right? They always have, but that's, you know, it's not to say that every client of mine is a musician. It's just that that's an influence on me, you know? And so, but I find that when you're doing some sort of a creative art form for a living, is that you have to have this blend of the creative sense and a business sense. And I come from a place where I was the guy that was, you know, that I was in the band, but I was also the band manager. I ran the rehearsal studio. I've always had an entrepreneurial side as well as a creative side. It just finally wasn't until I started my own business that I was really able to kind of take full control of everything. But that came with total responsibility. And I think I had to get myself ready for that. I wasn't really ready for that when I was younger. I had to get myself to the right place where I had the self-discipline to be able to start a business and really not waver. And now I'm really seeing more of the results of that, of what it took to sort of stick to it for all those years.
I mean, it seemed like, you know, our conversation's very, very reflective, very, you know, self-aware and reflective. And where does that all come from? Where, you know, you have a process where you're getting to different places in mm-hmm. your life and in your mind.
Well, I think that it's important. I've had a lot of death around me in the last year, and that's kind of made me really kind of think a bit more. But I also think that, you know, it's like I'm in my mid-40s right now, and I'm just sort of taking inventory on what's going on with my life and where am I heading and what do I want to be remembered for. And it's exciting because I did not live that way for a long time. I was very much a feather in the wind, so to speak, and didn't want to be tied down to anything. I always had an absolute fear of any kind of real commitment. But once I, in the way that I usually do things, is that I'm kind of an all or nothing type of guy. And once I got married and bought a house, then wasn't long after that that I was moving to another country and starting a whole new profession and then starting a business. And so it all goes back to kind of timing, you know? So timing's gotta be right, and you have to be ready for opportunities.
Want to walk us through like the move to England and London and really the
sure.
entry into, you know, doing your own business with clothes?
Right, so It was, this would have been the, it was fall of 2007. My wife is a mechanical engineer for the Army Research Lab, and her work was giving us the opportunity to go and to go move to London. And we went there with the idea that it was going to be great for her career. And I figured, well, this is going to be an exciting adventure. And I've always been a traveler. When I was you know, I was younger, I worked for an airline for years, and I used to be able to fly for free. And so I've always liked traveling and having adventures like that. And I figured, well, this could be, you know, we were newly married, and just thought this could be a great opportunity to try and go over there. And I was very fortunate that there was a headhunter that saw my resume and kind of took me under his wing. And it was interesting too, because he was younger than me. He was probably I think he's 10 years younger than me. But we really kind of hit it off. He called me, we talked on the phone, I told him my situation. And he's like, look, you seem like a creative guy. I might have something for you about learning how to design suits. And it's like, look, I don't really know anything about that. I actually don't even own a suit at this point. And I didn't, you know? So he's like, look, if you're willing to hustle and you're willing to learn, then this could be something for you. And at that point, I was so sick of like being the house husband that I was willing to pretty much do anything. So it was right time, right place, and open mind. I think that's a big thing. But it also went back to self-discipline. You know, that's kind of a, I think that's like a revolving story of my life, right? I think in a lot of people's life, you know, as far as like, you know, what are you gonna do with it now that you have it kind of up and running? And you know, I was in another country, and I had all the opportunity in the world to go and do anything that I wanted to do. Once I really learned, and I started, because at first it was you learn, you shadow, you follow, you're all over, and then you sort of get some freedom. And it's, you know, at that point you can either kind of sink or swim. And I realized that I'd, by being removed from Baltimore, being in a foreign city, being somewhere where I didn't know anyone, it made me really personally responsible to me. So I was going to own my success or I was going to own my failure, and I didn't want to fail. Plus it was very challenging to be in London and calling people about making suits for them with an American accent. So I realized I had to get really good, really fast if I was going to survive. Because you're in a place that's so, I considered London to be the epicenter for men's fashion. You know, it's like some would say it's Milan, but for me, it's London. And so I really immersed myself into this, and I enjoy it. I really like it. And I was able to get to go into these amazing buildings, because at that point I would travel and go see people all over the place. So I would go to these great buildings, and I would meet a lot of clients in conference rooms like this, and you would get these great views of London all the time that most people don't get to go and see. And it was a great experience. It really was an amazing experience to be over there. But then it was time to come home. We were having a baby and we wanted to kind of get back in our house and everything. And so that's what kind of ended up going and bringing us back home.
And then that was the start of,
it wasn't long after that I realized that I needed to. I kind of got to a fork in the road where it was. I realized if I was going to keep doing suits, is that I needed to do it my own way, because it was a really challenging time. It was when, you know, the bubble had burst and everything like that, and people weren't, you know, when I was in London, so many more people. I would be in the financial district every day. And so people there were dressing up every day. And I think they understood custom suiting a bit more than here, because it's so much a part of their history, right? So I came here and I was faced with a lot of challenges of, you know, it's hard to judge a book by its cover in this city, because, you know, because there's so many people that have such long running relationships and that are already established that they're not even really worried about how they're dressing. And it was just, it was a whole new set of challenges. But then I really realized, I'm like, I really like doing this. And And I just had to go and I just had to give it my all. I had to give it everything I had. I had to make some financial sacrifices and I just, but again, it went back to being, you know, making the choice and being personally responsible and saying, I really want this and I'm going to do whatever it takes to make it happen.
So you may have answered this, but you know, how did you overcome, you know, the challenges coming back and really, like, how do you sell a $2,000 suit to, you know, somebody in Baltimore? Now you have a national business, but
right.
Starting out, it was local.
Well, you know, something happened to me not long after I was home, and it was actually right close to here. I was seeing a guy that was on Pratt Street, 500 block of Pratt, I think it was the 500 block of Pratt Street, it could be wrong, but it was the building that had it was pretty high up like this, right? And I remember looking down at the harbor, and I got this view of the harbor and the boats and all the places all around the harbor, and I just looked at the city in a different way because I was at a different perspective. I wasn't on the street looking up at the buildings. I was up in the building looking down on everything. And I made the decision at that point that, you know, Baltimore isn't a blue collar city. You know, I'm born and raised here, but I just looked at it in a different way. And I looked at it for how much opportunity was actually here. And I'm like, there is wealth here and there is successful people here. And this is an up and coming city. And I've always believed in the potential that was here, right? It's like from coming from a music and art background, it's like, it's pretty well known that there's a lot of talented people that are here, but it's underground and it's underdog and I just realized, I'm like, I can't make a living like that. And so I just decided to go and really up the stakes. But I also did my homework and found that, like, this Baltimore was a major player in manufacturing clothes. We were second in the nation to New York. Most people don't know that. They don't know that most people that came here, you know, if you talk to a lot of people's grandparents or great grandparents, is that most of them were either in making clothes or they knew someone that was. At one point, there was 27,000 people that worked making clothes in this city, blocks from here, right where the old downtown is, where Sharp Dressed Man is. That old downtown area, clothes were made everywhere there. Because I did a couple events, having panel discussions with some of the old timers who lived it, and then some of the current people to really hear the living history. And that's how I kind of learned the best. And that is kind of really hearing the stories about what things were really like. And so, you know, it's like one of the staggering facts was that at one point, everyone in the country would have been wearing at least one piece of clothing that was made here in Baltimore. So I was like, okay, we don't have to rebuild it. I don't think I'm the guy to rebuild every, you know, but are there some real pearls in there? And what does that look like? So I kind of took that approach of that, you know, there was all kinds of clothing made here, but there was also some really high-end clothing made here. And so you kind of take that approach. Well, it happened once. This isn't necessarily reinventing the wheel. This is what works. And if you know your history, it's not really as challenging. You just got to figure out how to navigate that whole thing and do it in a way where you're honoring history, but you're also moving forward. And so I kind of took that approach to it. And as relationships grew with fabric makers and everything like that, I realized that that Baltimore was kind of, in a city like this, you're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. It's that simple. And so I didn't want to be part of the problem. I wanted to be part of the solution. And so that's everything that I'm trying to do, because I love this city and I believe in it. And so if you talk about the potential that it has and you believe in it, then you have to really do something. And I kind of feel like people who just talk about the problems and don't do anything about them, I really don't pay them that much mind, you know, because you have to be, if you're doing something to make some sort of a change in whatever capacity that you have, then you actually get a voice at that point. I mean, that's my opinion, and everybody's entitled to opinion, but that's mine.
Awesome. That's great.
Thank you.
You talked about this lunch a little bit. Fitting somebody to a custom suit is more than just measurements.
It is. The approach that we take is that I kind of have to know the person, because it's a personal experience, and I enjoy that anyway. You know, it's like you can kind of, you really can't ever have too many friends, right? So it's like, so when you get a chance to sit down and talk with someone and find out what do they want the clothes to do for them, right? What's the goal? Okay, you know, what is someone's role in business, or how are they expected to dress? What's their personality like? How far, how outlandish will they go? How conservative will they go? All those things come into, you know, what you want the clothes to be like, because you don't want to put someone in something that doesn't really reflect their personality. And I've watched a lot of people's fashion sense really grow. And you know, when people come in, they tell me I have no. When they walk in the door and they're like, oh, they don't have any fashion sense. I'm like, I beg to differ. You wouldn't be here if you didn't, or you know what you don't know, and you know that you want to have someone that's really going to help you and understand you, guide you down the road. And you know, it helps that I enjoy that fact. Plus, it's not so bad to get to work with successful people that are good at what they do. And, you know, and that's sort of like, you know, rising tide kind of carries all ships, and you learn. Like, I mean, I have some brilliant clients, and as I was growing a business, they took interest in me because they saw in me what they went through, and they helped to give me advice and guide me along the way. And, you know, I certainly can't take full credit for this. You know, it's like I had a lot of help that went to go and get this to the point where it is now. And we're just kind of really just getting started is the way I look at it.
And how do you get more clients? Is it word of mouth and referrals mostly?
I mean, that's the way every business gets there, right? You know, word of mouth is the most powerful thing. I mean, there's a lot of tools right now. You know, there's everything online, but there's still in fashion, print is still a big thing. You know, print is interesting in general of how they're keeping that alive and what they're doing with events and with us, you know, we do fashion shows and photo shoots and videos, and we, you know, have stylists that borrow our clothes and they go take them to do photos and video shoots and things that end up in movies and, you know, wardrobe, all kinds of, you know, it's like there's all kinds of ways to reach all these other people. And so, you know, we've been going at it in several different manners as far as how to market the business, and how do you do it in a world where people are just absolutely inundated with that. How do you stand apart from that? And that's the approach that we've been taking. And I gotta say, I really think the key ingredient to what we're doing is having fun doing it. If you're having fun doing it, why would people want to go and see you if you're miserable? Right? I mean, it's simple, right? If you love what you do, people gravitate towards that. And, you know, it's like, and if you're happy that, you know, misery does love company, but it's not the kind of company you really want to keep. And that's the approach that we're taking, is have a good time doing what you're doing. And when we do make a lot of special occasion clothes, and when you do that, you want people to be happy. And you feel like when you're, especially with weddings and everything, I feel like I'm a part of someone. I feel like I'm like the other groomsmen, you know what I mean? And like, I'm a part of the whole thing. And I like that.
So what is it meant to have Seth, your son Seth, be, you know, come up, be part of the business? And what surprised you most about what he's helped you with?
Wow, that's, so it's, you know, in order to answer that, you kind of got to go back to, you know, with him. You know, me and his mom split up when he was young, and we did the back and forth with everything, and it was really difficult to raise a child. I was, when he was born, I was 21 years old, so I was a kid myself. And you know, you're trying to grow up, you're trying to figure out how to become a man yourself, and I made plenty of mistakes along the way. And so you're doing that, you're trying to figure it all out. And I had always had, though, in the back of my mind, as I'm, because, you know, I was a starving artist for a long time as a musician. So it's like I've been absolutely broke. The place that was my first fitting studio was I used to live there, you know. So it's like, so I kind of like, before I started the business and everything like that, you know, so it was kind of interesting to sort of make this swing. You go to London, you come back and do that. But with Seth, it was, you know, when he came to me, you know, I would call him late at night when I was driving home, and we would talk, and I would tell him what I was up to and everything. And then I said to him, like, look, why don't you come down and let's talk about working together? And at that point, you know, he was, even when I look at photos of him, even from now, he's very baby faced and everything like that. But in the process of him growing up, I knew somehow, and it was kind of what got me through, was kind of like the mantra of how hard it was with raising a child being that young, is that I was going to be able to make a man of him someday. And that was what it was like. And I didn't know that it was going to happen the way that it happened. And what ended up happening was that he came to me, and he was, you know, he was 19 years old, and he started coming around, and I was like, let's do this. But when he came, when he was living out in Carroll County, and he came down, and we had inherited and bought out the rest of the people in the family from my wife's grandmother's house. And so we bought this house, and Seth moved into the house and helped me kind of fix the house all up and everything. He now lives there with his friends and everything. So he came down. He's living at this place. He's working with me, and we're spending a lot of, we're catching up on a lot of time together. Okay. But then it was like, after sort of the honeymoon was over, and I wasn't quite seeing that he wasn't quite getting this and the business was growing, and I kind of had like the freight train mentality. I'm like, you're either on it or you're off it. And I can't, you please don't get in the way, because I've been waiting a long time for this opportunity. And so it was pretty much looking like he was going to have to go, because he just wasn't getting it. And he realized that I was absolutely serious about everything that I was saying. And he realized this could be a great opportunity for him. And then he dove in. And when he dove in, that's when things started getting interesting, because I got a chance to really see what he was capable of, and who he was, and what was his personality. And I think that I've taken the approach with pretty much not just him, but just in general, is that you really find out what someone is like when you really get to work with them. And especially when things go wrong, right? People can tell you about what it's like, but when it really happens and you see how they react is when you find out a lot about someone. And so I got to really spend a good bit of time with him and really mentor him. And I was like, wow, this, you know, making a man of him is really happening. And I like what I saw, you know. It's like, you know, I like the person that I was seeing. And I realized it, after a while of him really spending some time around me and then seeing him around clients, I could see how we were kind of finishing each other's sentences, or he would say like, or I could see where he would say something that was like, that he was right on it, and he really got the flow of what was going on, and he started to taste some success, and success really tastes good, right? So, and he had never really had that. And so it just, you know, it really kind of started to catch on. But one of the interesting things that kind of happened with him was that, whereas it was music and fashion. With him, skateboarding and fashion. And I still skateboard, but not like he does. He really took it and kind of like really took it and ran with it. And so one day he's at our studio, and you know, I'd had him being on the phone making cold calls, and he couldn't hack it. I think he didn't have the confidence and the knowledge of what he was doing, and it must have been conveyed, and he was just getting rejected, and he just couldn't handle it. And so, like you do with a child, you're like, go outside and play. And he was all suited up, and he took his skateboard with him, and he started skating around Harbor East. And kaboom, you see a young guy flying down the street on a skateboard, wearing a suit, come flying down, ollie down a set of steps, and you're like, wow, that really grabs people's attention. And he felt very comfortable to go skate up to anybody and talk to them about clothes. And it just started, and it just turned into a thing where like every nice day he was out there skateboarding around, and we're in a good area where there's a lot of businesses and restaurants and everything. And he just started doing this and meeting more and more people. And I was like, that's fantastic. So then it turns into a thing where people want to take photos of him and, you know, all that stuff. And it just started to kind of evolve all that. And then his look also started to evolve more. We started being more fashion shoots, and And I was like, look, you kind of got, you got to work with what you got. You got, you're a young guy, you got great looks, put him on the runway. And then he was up for whatever. And that's kind of the, what it takes, right? You got to be willing to, if this is what it takes to do this, then I'm going to do it. I'm going to, and so he kept doing that and kept doing that to where he just got more and more successful and became his own, you know, it's like became his own personality in and of itself. And he's not afraid to talk to someone that's younger or someone that's older. He's got the self-confidence and he conveys that in what he's doing. And it's really been quite a show to watch over the last couple of years, to the point where last year I was able to go across country for a month and let him run the business, and he did a great job. And so now we're in the process of preparing him to go and open shop in Los Angeles next spring. So it's, you know, he's really taken this and 100% has run with it, to the point where now we're going to be able to go and, you know, really be, you know, he's not going to be working for me. We're going to really be business partners. And so that's fascinating, you know, and to see, because I look at what I'm doing with him, and I kind of wish that someone would have came along and did that for me as a musician, right? And being able to do that for someone else, it's so, I love it. It's great. And so I enjoy the being a mentor part. It's challenging. It's not always easy.
So why LA? How did you guys decide LA to expand?
So, I mean, Los Angeles has always been somewhere for me. It's always interested me. There's been several times I was going to move out there. When I worked for the airline, the first place I went to was Los Angeles, because I had friends that I grew up with that moved there. So I've traveled there several times, and I really like it. But what ended up happening was that last year, Seth and I both did a lot of traveling. And so I did mine as one big lump. It took an RV, went across country, and did that. He went out west a couple of times. He has a friend of his that he grew up with that is the guy that left out of here, went to Colorado, became a snowboard instructor and a lift operator, snowboarded out there for a couple of seasons. The guy's really good. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to move to California. Went to California and is like, so he's has a buddy to go and catch up with and go travel with. So he started going out to California and he really fell in love with it. Cause of the lifestyle and the weather and the whole thing. And I get it, you know, and when he really came to me and he started talking about it, well, I was like, look, if we're going to do this, I really want to see you do a business plan and lay it all out with me. And he was like, are you kidding? I'm like, no. And I really held his hand to the fire to do that. Plus for him to make it real that he was going to do this and let's start, you know, put out, when are you going to do this? And what's it all going to be like? And what's it going to look like? And what does it look like for an apartment and your insurance? And, you know, and it's because I know from a guy that's traveled is it, you know, it's like, and I lived in London. That's a very expensive city. So I'm like, I needed for him to understand how, you know, that this wasn't just like, oh, hey, you're free to move whenever you want. But if we're doing business together, then it's like, let's make sure that you know what it is that you're getting yourself into. Cause you know, I got a fair idea. It's going to be challenging, but, you know, he's the one that said, you know, he'd been pretty much up and down a good bit of the West Coast. And, you know, with us is that we have some musicians as clients, and, you know, and Seth has actually got a chance to do some acting and everything too. And just Los Angeles just is like, that's where, you know, the stars, that's where they live. So, you know, we've been fortunate to have some of them pass through or whatever. When we've met someone through here, he's going to go right to where they are. And I just think that business is going to explode for him. By just being in the right place. And I mean, there's worse place to live than Santa Monica, California. So that's, you know, that's kind of where everything is. That's where we're going.
Yeah, I was out there for 13 years. So I worked in Santa Monica. I lived in Tarzana, Encino. Used to play basketball with Ron Howard and Michael Keaton in Encino Park.
They're just people, yeah. Right? I mean, that's the thing, is it's like, they're just people. And but you know, they have something kind of amazing going on. I mean, that's, you know, and we've seen that. But you know, you get a chance to work with different people, and the more you can be normal with them, the more they appreciate it, because everywhere else they get, you know, yeah. So that's, you know, and that's kind of the approach that we want to take with this. And when you can do that, and you know, and since some of the people we've been working with, is that we're going to kind of grow it off of, you know, of what we already know. But he's going to have some challenges in front of him. I mean, that's like same thing happened to me. I moved to London and I didn't know anyone, and you got to start it from scratch. It's hard, but yeah.
He'll have his moment of looking down upon the city, right? So you had your London moment, you had your Baltimore moment.
Right. I'm looking forward to him being able to be out there, and then it's like, and then it gives me a reason to travel out there and everything too. I mean, Los Angeles is a great city. An awesome place. There's kind of nowhere else like it, right?
So tell us about Sharp Dressed Man. How'd you get the inspiration and the why behind Sharp Dressed Man?
Well, you know, it's always interesting how sometimes things can kind of happen, right? And what the deal was is I was going to see a client of mine, and he's an attorney, and I was bringing him some new suits, and he had a couple bags in his office, trash bags full of clothes, and he said to me, "Those are for you because you spoiled me with the way you make my suits fit. So those are my old suits, which were still really nice." And he's like, "You have to find a home for them." And I took them with me, not really knowing what to do, where to go with them. And so I put them in my car, drove around for a while, and I'm like, where do I take these things? And I talked to a friend of mine who said, "Why don't you consider the Helping Up Mission?" And so I started a relationship with Helping Up Mission, and I'll bring a lot of clothes to them, right? Because it was like, once I did this, clothes just started finding their way to me. They needed a home. And so I would bring clothes to them. And they had like a clothing closet in the basement. And then I had a great relationship that was started with the people from Living Classrooms. And there was a guy named Howard Wicker that was there, he's passed away, but he had renovated this building over in Mount Vernon. And he said, "I might have a great place for you to have a boutique for Sharp Dressed Man." And what they were doing is they were going into jails and prisons, and they were finding guys that were being released who were actually really trying to make a change in their life. And they would do a mentoring program with them. And so it was a very intense, hands-on, year-long kind of situation. And so when the guys were ready to go and interview and everything, they'd bring them into our boutique. And so the focus originally was like really helping the guys at Living Classrooms. And then Howard passed away. They downsized the program, and that's when we decided to get our own facility, because we found, as more people heard about us, more organizations wanted to come and get the clothes, but we were kind of captive where we were. And so we decided to get our own place, and then the whole thing kind of started to grow. But you know, the reality of it is that it's like, the why I do this, right, is that, you know, I didn't always have such an easy life. You know, I've been, I kind of hinted at that I've been a musician and everything, but my life actually was really pretty off the rails for a while. I was very much in the rock star mindset, and you know, it's like, and I lost a lot of friends who OD'd and everything, and I turned my life around years ago, and this is a way that I help other people, because a lot of these guys are coming out of situations where, you know, they made bad choices. One bad choice, they didn't have anybody to guide them. One bad choice led to another, to another, to another. Next thing you know, I mean, we see some guys who have done some serious time and wasted a lot of their time being locked up. And when you get a chance to talk to these guys, they wish they could go back in time and fix it, but they can't. So all you really get then, you know, it's like the old thing, when's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When's the second best time? Today. So it's, we take the approach of giving these people a second chance. And it's interesting for me, because if I wouldn't have changed my life, I would have probably been in line waiting to get a free suit rather than the person giving them away. And the guys that are receiving the suits, they can kind of, some of them don't know quite what to make of me. And then the ones that get to know me, they're like, it's a two-way street though. You know what I mean? The whole thing is a two-way street. And so, you know, it's like, for me, it keeps me grounded and it keeps it fresh and it keeps it real, that as far as, you know, what happens if you don't make the right choices, or what happens if you backslide and everything like that. And so now it's at a point where it's like, I mean, I love it. I mean, it's like, I'm very fortunate that I get to see the expression on people's faces when I put brand new custom suits on them that I created. And I would tell you that it's also equally as powerful, if not sometimes more, when you put clothes on someone who hasn't looked at themselves with self-respect in a long time, and they see, they just, you know, the way we do it, you put them all together and look, and then they reveal in the mirror, they look at themselves and you see that look on their face, and it's kind of like, today's the day. And so it, you know, it pays amazing fringe benefits to my soul. And you know, it's when you, I've built my business off of when you give, you receive, and it works 100%. In the beginning, and when I was younger, I used to always think, well, how can I give? You know, I always just thought it was about money, and you realize that it's time, talent, and treasure. If you give any one of the three, is that things can magically start happening for you. And I was in a situation where, you know, because somebody wanted to get rid of suits and there wasn't anywhere to take them, I used my time and my talent because I didn't have the money, because I was investing everything in the business to make it work. And the more that I did this and the more that I helped people, the more I saw my business growing. And I don't think it was a coincidence. I definitely think there's an absolute correlation between the two, and I'm seeing it work. So why question it if it's working? I'm just going to keep going for it.
And so you have a location up on
Lexington Street. We now have, you know, I've been doing this from where we had a clothing closet in the basement at one place, and then had a boutique, and then it got downsized into a bedroom, and then we got our own place where we had a, you know, one of those row house places. Now, since April last year, so over a year, we've been in a place that was, it used to be a Woolworths department store on Lexington Street. The main floor is 10,000 square feet, and it's just full of suits. And so it's, this year we've dressed over 1,000 guys. The goal is 2,000. And I think since starting this whole thing, I want to say we've dressed about 5,000 guys.
And then you have an event October 14th. Tell us about that.
We do. October 14th is a 7-year anniversary for Christopher Schaefer Clothier. It's kind of extra special. 7 is my lucky number. It's also the one where it's like, with Seth going and moving, he won't be here for next year, and I probably won't do an 8-year and a 9-year. What I want to focus on is getting him to having his 1-year anniversary in Los Angeles, 2-year anniversary. And what I've seen in growing this business is that 3 years is a good tipping point for a business, right? And you know, if he can get it to the 3-year point, then that's the 10-year point for the business, and that's when the big part, that's the next big shebang. So this is kind of a big deal for us, you know, and with it being a 7-year anniversary, we're doing a whole Bond theme, and you know, we have like rented gaming tables, and you know, we hired an amazing jazz band, and we're doing like the best Bond and best Bond girl, and you know, all that stuff. So it's
at your place, or
it's going to be at our place, but we're looking at possibly going to another location to do something bigger, and so I'll know more about that next week. But because we're going to have a big party. We've been, and that's part of how I grow my business too. Have great events. You have great events, you bring people in, you show them a really good time. And you know, we don't charge people to come to our parties. They come out, they have a great time. And then usually someone in the crowd knows someone that likes suits, and it's an interesting way to do business when you can't always see the absolute correlation on your ROI. I tell you that, you know, Sharp Dressed Man has taught me so much about partnering, right? Because that's what successful nonprofits do, right? It's like with us, we started it because we didn't really find it exist anywhere. There's women's organizations that recycle suits and clothes all over the place, but there wasn't one for men.
Dress for Success.
Right, Suited to Succeed. There's, you know, there's a bunch of them. Ruth's Closet. You know, there's all these places that do that, and I think because women are just wired that way, that they do that. Men, not so much. And I just happened to be the guy that was like, hey, there's a need, and we started it, and now it's really growing. But what I've seen from that, and what's been successful for us, is that, you know, there's some great programs that are out there that are doing job readiness, that are mentoring guys, that, you know, all, that are helping people with financial literacy and writing resume. We don't do that, right? And it's like, what I've learned, stay good at what you're good at, and let other people do the same, because if you're stepping on their toes, well, there can't really be a partnership. So we take that approach to it, and we have great relationships with all these partners, and that's who sends us the guys that need the clothes, because we can't go through doing all the vetting process of everyone who needs a suit and who doesn't. They bring us them in groups at a time. The people that need the suits, we help them out. So I've also taken that approach And, you know, it's like the two, you learn from both of them, you know what I mean? So it's like partnerships are, they're great. They make, you know, it's the old many hands make light work, right? It's the same kind of idea.
Well, that's awesome.
I have one
go ahead.
Question.
I'm going to, you ask it, I'm going to go.
Okay. You have to look over there, though.
Okay.
Pretend I'm sitting.
I think this is good. You're going to have a lot of men watching this. Can you provide some fashion advice, some basic fundamental fashion advice for the men who are watching?
Basic fundamental fashion advice is a couple things. Is that you have to have a core wardrobe. The navy suit, the gray suit, probably in solids for starters, white shirt, pink shirt, lavender shirt, blue shirt, different ties that can express your personality. Those things are always smart, but more than anything, have the clothes fit properly. It doesn't have to be an expensive suit if it just fits you right. If it fits you right, then it just kind of gives you the confidence so that you feel good in the clothes that you're wearing. And then, of course, you know, and then it's like when you're ready to get a suit made, then it's like then you do that and you experience what that feels like. But buyer beware is that there's nothing quite like it. So that's kind of my approach.
This has been CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offit Kerman, attorneys at law, your perfect legal partner. For more information and to tell your entrepreneurial story, visit us on the web at ceominutes.com.